The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, everyone, I think we'll get started.
Good March.
I'm the director of the Career Development Office, and Laura Fleet, one of our career counselors, is also here as well. We just wanted to have this program, we're going to introduce our speaker, Bill Walker, in a few minutes, but we wanted to have this program because we know spring break is coming up, and we're hoping that a lot of you will be able to leverage the opportunities if you are at a 1L writing on to one of the journals. I don't know how many 1Ls do you have? Okay. How was the 1Ls? 2Ls? Maybe 3Ls? Okay, great. So really, I mean, hopefully if your, you know, time will permit, that you can really take this time, sort of whether it's on class, to focus on your job search if you're still conducting it, and what you can do to start to build these relationships. So what we're really going to focus on today is informational interviewing, some of the effective approaches for that. We're also happy to take any other questions you have. But really the focus is trying to do what I consider dual track. So you may be applying to jobs where there are postings or applying to employers that you're interested in, but also alongside of that, you have to do sort of more of this networking, building relationships, however you want to couch it, but you need to be doing that as well. Because in the long run, that type of development in terms of the network that you're building is going to be very helpful. And you might not see it right now, you might not see the fruits of your labor until 6 months from now or a year from now, but they will be helpful. So it's something you should be doing in conjunction with just a traditional job search. What we handed out, if you don't have a copy, there's some other ones down here, this Art of Networking packet that we have. Like I said, today we're going to focus on informational interviewing. There is another program coming up on March 25th. Representatives from the Department of Justice will be here to talk about more formal networking at job fairs and career fairs and that type of thing. But we're going to talk about now more sort of one-on-one touches informational interviewing. So I'm just going to sort of walk you through at least some of the basic things that are in this handout. I also, on your way out, we have these NOW guides, which is little tri-fold pamphlets. I'm just going to leave them over here that you can also take that are helpful resources that you might want to take a look at. So the first thing we just talk about is, you know, what is networking? Why is it important? I just like to think of networking as building relationships. That's really all you're doing. So if you think about your personal life, just how you build friendships with people, how you develop closer bonds with your family, how you meet friends of friends and develop bonds with them. And really that's all you're doing, but in a more professional context. So if you keep that in mind, it's not as daunting. I think when people think of networking, they think, oh my gosh, I have to go in, I have to go to this reception, I have to collect 10 business cards, then what am I supposed to do? And that to me is not really effective networking. So what you really want to focus on is just trying to naturally build relationships with individuals, mostly with whom they will have similar interests. So that's what at least I like to view networking as. So remember, identifying contacts, who are your family, who are your friends, who are your colleagues. I can't tell you how many students I talk to that say, you know what, I'm the first person in my family to go to law school. So I have absolutely no contacts in the legal community. Why would they differ? I mean, have we talked to people, even family or friends that aren't in the legal community, but maybe know a lawyer? So we really want to make sure that you're taking a very broad view of your networks and how they could benefit you in the long run. Under number one, just basic networking steps, we do have references to a couple of resources that might be helpful. We have a mentor database on the OCPE website. Those are alumni who have said at some point over the past several years, yes, I'm happy to talk to current students. It's a nationwide database. It's not very sophisticated, so I'd be careful with how you're putting your terms in there. I keep it very broad. But at some point, these individuals said that they want to help current students. So sometimes they don't tell us if they move to another employer, so we do encourage you to make sure that they are where they said they are at the time that they signed up. But at the same time, it's a good resource that might give you some leads. Martindale, LexisNexis, great ways to just figure out, is there someone who else went to WCL, is there someone who went to my undergraduate institution? A lot of times that gets overlooked as well, so you want to maximize your college network as well as your law school network. Are there other students? Your classmates are going to be practicing lawyers for the most part, so developing the relationships with your classmates now can really help you in the future. professors. There are a lot of professors at WCL who want to help students with their career development, so really trying to focus on professors in a particular practice area, stopping by their office hours to have a conversation with them is certainly one way to start that relationship. Number two, make contact and schedule information to interview. So really what you're trying to figure out is, well, who should I outreach to? You're deciding on your outreach and you're trying to come up with a strategy for how that outreach will be implemented. Two things that we typically say, do not attach a resume to an email request for an informational interview, and don't ask for a job. What you're trying to ask for is information. They know ultimately that you're a law student and you're looking for a job. But in this context, you're trying to build that relationship first so they can help you more effectively with your job search. Now, that being said, I mean, I do know of some students and alums who will attach their resume and the person will say, great, I'll send it along. So, I mean, there are exceptions to every rule. But typically, if you're trying to use this as a way to break the ice, we would suggest that you don't attach your resume. And if there are any questions, just feel free to chime in. This is meant to be somewhat informal. Preparing for your interview. The now handout that is up there can be helpful with this, but you do have to prepare. You're the one who's driving this process. So if you're requesting someone's time, you should come in and be prepared to talk to them and have questions. And just like they would be interviewing you for a job, you're sort of interviewing them and trying to get as much information as possible. So you really need to be prepared. Dress professionally. Don't go in wearing your jeans and flip-flops. Make sure you look professional. You never know where these things can lead. The point here is that you want to develop the relationship, but I know a lot of people will say, great, it was a pleasure meeting you, send me your resume, give it to me, I'm going to see what I can do here, because they really had a connection with you off the bat. So you never know when that's going to happen, so you want to make sure that you're prepared, and that does mean, you know, dressing professionally, leaving the interview, you know, asking for contacts and referrals. I mean, that's what you're trying to get. Are there other resources that you might want to take a look at? Does that person have someone else that you might want to speak to? You should bring copies of your resume, but I wouldn't necessarily offer it unless it's asked. And you might get asked and you might not, but I would definitely always be prepared in case having a resume is something that would be helpful. Debrief and document. I'll show you in the back of this where we have some charts that will help you just to chart your progress, both for informational interviews and other interviews. So you want to make sure that if you have information you are given, if there's someone that whose name you received and you should be following up with them, then you do that. There's no use in getting the information if you're not going to do something with it. You also want to keep your initial person in the loop. So let's say, you know, Susan Smith says, hey, you should contact Bob Jones. You contact Bob Jones, and he says, sure, send me your resume. You end up getting a job out of that. You definitely want to make sure Susan Smith is in the loop and that she knows that she added value to your job search. So keeping that relationship up is going to be important. And we'll also help with follow-up. There's no reason to meet someone and just let that relationship go. You want to follow up with them and continue to build the relationship. Sending thank you notes is very important, and we have a couple of thank you notes in the back that, or at least one that can be helpful as well. So that's just some general information. I'm going to skip through the career fairs and table talk because a lot of that's going to be covered on March 25th. But I would go to page 6, which is an appendix, which has you just really think about brainstorming who do I know? Who are people that I know? Because you'd be surprised if you could pen a paper that you probably know a lot more people than you give yourself credit for. So this is the contact list. As you see, everyone from relatives to alumni to friends to community, people you know through community service. So this might just be good for you to sit down for 10 minutes at some point in the next couple of days and think about, well, who do I know? And who could possibly help you with my job search? Page 7, there are a couple of samples of some networking emails because I know sometimes it's hard to get started down this path. So we have a couple of examples. I wouldn't use these verbatim. You're going to have to personalize these based on your own experiences and interests and that of the individual you're contacting. But I think certainly this hopefully will give you a roadmap and a framework that can get you started. I know that sometimes I'll get questions from students about, well, how should I approach this? Should I call? Should I email? What's the best way? I think really it's ultimately what you're most interested in. I can tell you as someone who gets a lot of emails every day that if for some reason I missed your email or can't get to it for a day or two, it's always there in my inbox ready for action, whereas a phone call, if I'm not sitting at my desk and I don't have a piece of paper written down with a message, I might have recited that. So, but everyone has their own phone call. Email is a little more tangible and I think can be visible, but again, I think it's really up to you and your comfort level. We do have sort of a little sample on page 8, you know, making these phone calls. One thing that I always like to do is say, this would be a time for somebody who might pick up the phone, but it's really not the best time to speak with them, so you're giving them the option to say, no, but, you know, later on this afternoon might be better when you have more of their full attention. So you might want to think about just strategy in terms of the phone calling and sort of knowing that you probably have about 30 seconds to a minute to try to make this happen, and so really trying to get through the high points first, trying to set up that initial interview, and then going in and talking to them in a little more detail. There's also information on page 9 about leaving voicemail messages, because again, a lot of times you'll get someone's voicemail and they're not quite sure exactly what you should say in a voicemail. So there's a bit of a little script here, and as you can see, it's really just identifying yourself. How did you get their name? Why are you contacting them? What's the connection there? And really trying to be as flexible as possible so that they know that you're happy to accommodate whatever schedule they have. And then finally on page 9, there's a thank you note, which again can be very brief. Remember, thank you notes, they should be error-free, just like when you send your cover letter and your resume. Something very brief, just thanking them for their time, and it gives you the opportunity again to follow up with them. Any questions so far? Okay. Just a couple more sheets and then we'll get Bill's great advice. Informational interview checklist. Just a couple things again to try to keep you organized in terms of what you're going to be talking about. Again, you're driving this interview, so you want to make sure that you have enough information to share with the person with whom you're speaking. Something on here that we have your 2-minute pitch, that's sort of what I described in the voicemail. You want to be really prepared. I mean, you could meet someone in the elevator. You have all these great programs going on at WCL right now that just span a broad range of topics. I mean, you could meet someone in an elevator going up 6 floors, and if it's a speaker for a program that you're interested in, I mean, you should have your pitch sort of ready. It might not be 2 minutes, although I know with our elevator sometimes the wait can be a little long, but I mean, definitely want to be able to say, this is who I am, this is what I'm looking for, so that the person knows pretty quickly what it is that you're targeting. So this is just, again, another way to try to keep you know, organized in your approach. And then we have suggested informational interview questions. So here's some questions that you might get you started. Now, I would not suggest going into an informational interview with your list of questions and sort of checking them off. I mean, some of this, you know, will come organically. Some of it will come in the course of the conversation. But here are some things that you might want to keep in mind when you are talking to individuals. And then finally, on page 12, we have really just a sample networking chart. This can be done in whatever medium you're most comfortable with. It could be an Excel spreadsheet, it could be a Word document. But really, again, we try to keep you as sort of focused as possible. Did you, you know, set up the interview? Did you send a thank you note? Who referred you? Again, going back to making sure that person is kept in the loop. And then also just trying to get yourself into the sort of framework of following up with these individuals. So let's say you do some informational interviewing in March. You may not have contact with them again until the summer to tell them, hey, by the way, I did get this job. This is what I'll be doing this summer. You might not contact them again until next fall, but maybe you're looking for a job for either postgraduate or for second year or even beyond if you're a third year student. So really making sure that you are following up with them constantly and maintaining that relationship, that's really your responsibility. The person you're talking to may or may not feel that they need to continue the relationship. But if you feel you need to, you're the one who's going to be driving that bus. So you want to make sure that you keep yourself as organized as possible. And then finally, in the back, we just have an article that came out a couple years ago now, but it's really a very good article just about working with the room like a pro and just some advice about how you go about it here in the context of more informal networking if you're at a cocktail reception or some other type of place where you meet practitioners or others who might help your job search, just some strategies there that might be helpful. Any questions so far? Okay. I'm going to turn to Bill, who is our guest today, and just give you a little bit of background about Bill. He is a managing principal of Anson Management Partners. He oversees executive legal services, professional staffing, and strategic advisory services, those divisions, which keep him on the leading edge of current human capital management trends and practices of respecting attorneys in the workforce. He is a trusted advisor and is well respected for his ability to provide balanced counsel to both employers and employee candidates while assisting them with achieving their respective goals and objectives. He is sought after speaker on career strategy and talent management issues that affect legal professionals. Prior to his current position, he was managing director for one of the nation's largest executive legal search firms. And before becoming involved in executive searching, he practiced law in private law firms as well as with the American Red Cross. He earned his BA in economics from the College of the Holy Cross. And I didn't know this, but he played basketball professionally. It's a little bit of a secret, but now I know. Before attending law school, he played basketball, and then he received his JD from the University of Connecticut School of Law, where he's president of the Student Bar Association and articles editor for the Connecticut Journal of International Law. So please join me in welcoming Bill. So given Bill's background, he's an attorney. He currently works with attorneys who are seeking positions, as well as clients who are, trying to find good talent. So just wanted to start with a couple of questions, and you all should feel free to chime in on questions as well. So generally, I just wanted to get a sense for what you think are the benefits of networking broadly and how that's been a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me here, and thank you for Pete's, I guess. We'll hopefully keep your sugar levels at the right point to pay attention. The information of at least networking from a broader standpoint has been quite helpful with what I do, and it'll be helpful as you will find out later on with your careers and as you start going forward. I think the primary benefit of it is it gives you an opportunity to warm up a relationship or start a relationship with one that did not exist previously. It is one of the tougher things to do, to say hello or introduce yourself to someone you do not know, but it can be the most value-added aspect to what you do for getting your first job or client development skills perhaps down the road. You never know where your relationship can stretch out and go to. And I think one of the things you have to keep in mind is that this is an opportunity just to say hello and get to know somebody new. It's more personal than Facebook. But it works in a much deeper way when people have the opportunity to know that you are someone that exists beyond the paper. I think every opportunity you have, whether it be in casual settings or in the elevator or in networking opportunities where there's a professional organization wrapped behind it, opportunities they should take advantage of. It's hard to break away from your friends. You might go there with your group of three and have a buddy system, but break free for a few minutes and say hello to someone. You'll find that, I think, generally speaking, most people want to help you at the end of the day, and keep that in mind. That'll help build your confidence when you go to say hello to someone.
And how do you think information items for job seekers who are looking for summer postgraduate jobs? I know it's very hard to not be or to be really focused on where is the job posting, where is the employer, as opposed to this track, but how do you think this can be helpful just to talk to people in the industry?
Yeah, I think it's extremely helpful because the opportunities you have in law school is to kind of perform your own due diligence about what it is that you're going to, whether it be an employer specifically, or to learn more about what career path that you want to take. One of the things to keep in mind is that once you step outside of the law school environment, you go into a professional setting, you're putting yourself on a path. And you're in a path that, unfortunately, when people look back on later on, you're kind of stuck in a rut as far as that initial decision you made in terms of what practice area you want to go to, what sort of organization you affiliate yourself with. I hate to say it, you guys may not have experienced it yet, but the lawyers aren't very proactive in terms of their thinking. After you start making those first steps into your career, it becomes very challenging for people. I've spoken to a lot of folks individuals who want to retool themselves after being a real estate attorney and all of a sudden decide they want to do probate law. Well, it's a very difficult conversation to have for that individual specifically, for me and my colleagues in our role in terms of trying to find employment for some of these attorneys. If you would have taken the time, perhaps you had some time, and you guys, I know you're very busy with studying your coursework and have a lot of things to do, but believe me, you probably have a few minutes that you can spare at least to go out and say hello to somebody if you're interested in IP, or you're not sure you want to do corporate securities work, and you're trying to find yourself what direction you want to go to. These informational opportunities are the best things for you because once you step on that path, and you might be able to find something that is a hybrid of all these positions too, and it's kind of more informal also, so it gives you the opportunity to be in a position of control as opposed to feeling as though you're in a deposition being asked a question you have the perfect answer every single time.
Have you seen or do you have any examples of how networking has helped either either you as an attorney when you're practicing or even seeing how individuals you're working with have been able to progress their careers because of networking? Or?
Absolutely. Well, when I first started out, I went to University of Connecticut in school. Great school, enjoyed myself. I think that our school shares some similarities in terms of how we may be perceived in the broader national scheme of things. One of the things I did not realize from going to law school, but I realized in the job search area, was that we had more of a regional pool of employers that were most attracted to our student base. And what I found was through, you know, the information that we were at least networking, I was able to do a lot of the tactics that are discussed in the panel here. I reached out to some folks who are beyond the New England region, who went to college or went to my law school, and was able to get an opportunity to sit down with them. The success there is that not only was able to get the information interview, but it did flip into a more formal interview after the thing, and a job offer. So I was one of the few folks who I think, at least aggressively enough, or had enough interest in my own career pursuits, to be able to step out and get job opportunities in, well, New York is kind of in that region, but Chicago, here in the D.C. area, which weren't typical for people coming from the UConn alumni base. Now, we have students all across the country, and when they're rare in places, I don't know where you're from, but if you're trying to get back to Arizona, let's say, and there happens to be an American University grad there, they often are extremely enthusiastic to have the chance to sit down and speak with someone. And so that helped me from, you know, the job search initially, and even while practicing. There's been times where networking with people at a professional association event or whatever it might be, if you have a personal relationship with someone and you're at the negotiating table, I'm a former corporate attorney, and there are opportunities of tension. But if you have some sort of personal relationship with someone, it needs the ability to request information. Needs the ability to kind of advance beyond issues that become deal breakers or things that slow the process down. It all has an effect on you positively, I think, more so than negatively. And of course, that depends on how you interact with the person. If you come off in a more negative way, then I think people are going to perceive you in the same way. But if you choose to be a positive way, I think it leads for opportunities for positive discussions at the end of the day. As far as a student, in terms of, again, the informational, in terms of how it's helpful, you know, it opens up doors for you. And as I said, people remember, I mean, I recall I'm sitting here looking at you and I'm laughing because it's one of the rare opportunities I'm going to find myself in law school environments more often now, to be back in a law school setting. And I think you all should take advantage of that opportunity because there's an innocence about you all. And I want to know your personal that's true now. There's an innocence that I think professionals have been jaded by the years of practice. Want to step back and have a little refreshing opportunity to hear about what's happening back on campus, really. You guys go through the building, oh, I didn't know this. When it starts something where you have a relationship, you might see that person a year and a half, 2 years down the road, or 6 years down the road and say, hey, I remember the time that I spent with you. I really appreciate it. Here I am today. And it pays real big dividends.
Can you think of any common mistakes that individuals make? I'm sure you probably get requests for commission interviews, or you know, people go out and say, hey, I did this. Do you? Anything that sort of strikes you in terms of that probably
wasn't
the best approach to take?
Yeah, one of the things you want to have is just a level of genuineness as far as to why you're making the request in the first place. Everyone is busy. We all have limited time. And you don't want to be perceived as wasting someone's time. So, you know, before you even set up an information request, and I understand, especially in today's economy, the need to just get a job. But if it has nothing, there's no sense of passion or eagerness on your part, and you're asking for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes on someone else's part, you can almost sense that when you're sitting on the other side of the table as a person perhaps has employment, as a more senior person trying to help you out, that it becomes something that not only stains you possibly because people remember things. Lawyers try to find ways to break people down, not necessarily build people up. That's something you'll see probably later on in life. And I don't mean to say this to have you all think it is a black cloud over the profession. That's not the case. But when you have your opportunities, you like to at least have the opportunity to be perceived as, wow, this is a nice conversation I'm having with this individual. I see some possibilities for this person. I see they seem to have a sense of eagerness about themselves. They came to talk about a practice area that either I know about or maybe some of my colleagues in some private law firm setting understand. If it's about a career path, whether to go into government in-house or law firm environment, there's some things there that you can talk about that is not perceived as a waste. People will take the break, but make sure there's at least some sort of connection going forward. And I guess the other thing in terms of seeking these information interviews is to be diligent about what you're trying to do, but don't be overly aggressive with what you're trying to get at the end of the day, too. Because, again, it is their time. they have something that you want, remember that, and they don't have to do this for you. So there's a fine line, a balance, I guess, in terms of what you need to do to seek these opportunities, but they're definitely value-added for you, so I would definitely take that one out for it.
I'll say that they always say is don't be a stalker. So, you know, now the phones, they have the phone numbers that sometimes come up. Sometimes students, if they don't want to leave messages, but they'll keep calling, after a while, they see the same number coming up. They may not know who it is, but then once they finally get that person, like, oh, so that's the person who's been calling me, you know, 5 times a day until I picked up the phone. So you do have to be a little careful that, I think diligence, you definitely have to exhibit that, but at the same time, some judgment. In terms of knowing, okay, if this person's really not going to get back to you or not going to pick up the phone, then maybe move on to someone else. So you have to have another judgment. I'm just curious, how many of you have tried sort of informational interviews in the past? And can you just talk a little bit about what you think? Was it successful? Do you think it got you additional information? I mean, what do you think in terms of your own approaches?
Yeah. I met with an alumni from the school, and it was really helpful, and it feels like it's going to be successful, but there's just, you know, the whole follow-up stuff is going on right now, so. Yeah. But it was really good because I actually got to talk to someone who's doing stuff that I potentially wanted to do.
Good. And how long did the meeting go to meeting? Did you feel like you were driving the conversation, or what was the structure of the meeting?
Let's see, it was just like at a Starbucks, it was like 20, 30 minutes. It was mostly them trying to like tell you what they're doing currently and kind of like reminiscing about law school days. So it was actually really easy. Like, I didn't think it was that stressful at all.
The other thing, keep in mind, I know the job search is what this discussion is about, but I don't know how many of you are pursuing private law firm interests or perhaps in the House of Governors setting, generally being the three broad categories that you can go into. This is a short-sighted opportunity. I'm telling you, people, remember, when you have a chance to sit down with someone. In fact, one of my colleagues is somebody that I interviewed when I was a junior associate at the law firm, and here we are, professional colleagues now, which we never would have known, but 10 years later, here it is working again. You just never know how these relationships can spin out and become, so I think it's very helpful to find out what you want to do from your career standpoint, but might help you out in other ways too.
Anybody else that had either a good experience with informational interview or maybe not, didn't feel it was helpful? How many of you are looking outside of the D.C. metro area for positions? And will you be there over spring break, at least in one of the geographic areas that you're seeking, or no? Okay. In terms of outreach individuals, because I know sometimes it's hard with our market. I mean, every market's going to be slightly different, and so the players will be slightly different. I mean, D.C. is so focused on a mix of everything, government and public interest and large firms and some corporate work, whereas you go someplace else and their focus might be more on the state and local level in terms of government as opposed to the federal level. So I don't know if you thought broadly about trying to identify individuals, at least in those particular sectors or employment sectors, to figure out if there's a way that you can make inroads even long distance. I don't know if that's, if you're having any difficulty with the long distance aspect of it, or?
Yeah. My informational interview was up in Boston. It was over winter break, and I'm looking into communications law, and he basically said he works for the Mass government with the Department of Telecom and Cable, and he basically said you probably want to stay in D.C. for a couple of years and get some experience, but at the same time it was pretty helpful because he seemed like he'd be willing to help me after I got that experience. Moving back up.
So. Have you been able to, you think it's a relationship where you can follow up and really just build on that?
I think so. I mean, he wasn't an alum of here, but it seemed like he would be willing to help me in the future, so yeah.
And that's a really good point. I mean, they do not have to be necessarily alums of your particular schools to be effective. So, I mean, really trying to maximize any referrals that you get. Or how did you find that individual if it wasn't an alum? How did you find it?
It was just a completely random email. He's actually the general counsel of the Mass Department of Telecom and Cable, so it seemed like he would be a good guy to talk to, and I just shot it out there. Yeah.
It's not rocket science, so to speak. I mean, sometimes it's just as easy. I mean, this student was able to talk to a GC of an organization just by sending an email out. So
I think sometimes we get a little fearful that, I mean, and look, if you get 1 out of 10 that say, yes, I'll talk to you, that's really pretty successful. So don't let the numbers, you know, make you feel that, oh, I should really be getting 7 out of 10, this is not working. I mean, if you get 1 to 3 people that actually respond back and you're actually able to talk to one of them, that's pretty successful. I mean, it may not seem like it, but it is. It's very successful.
Absolutely. And I appreciate what you did from an outreach standpoint. And even the advice I was given by the general counsel contacted, perhaps you want to do something in D.C. and look to Boston later on. Did he or she happen to give you any advice as far as to what sorts of affiliations you want to make, here in D.C.? Because there's think tanks, there's trade associations, there's things in the government communication space, you know.
Yeah, I'm not really, because I guess my focus is more on the practice area than the sector, whether government or private. So he basically just said, because of the nature of communication, that's very centered here. So he just said, you're going up against a lot more experienced attorneys in Boston, so just get any experience, really.
Yeah. I can say this also in terms of what I've done personally and we've done from a national standpoint. Having the opportunity as a lawyer to practice in Washington, D.C. does have a certain cachet to it that's appreciated by the market. It's not, you know, critical at the end of the day, but to the point that was made, it might provide some benefits to associate yourself with some organization and just kind of widen your pool. It sounds like you have a communications practice where your focus. Gain substantive skills within the communication practice area in a number of different environments, and you might be able to shape that one way or another, subject to what your long-term goal interest might be. Narrowly focused to become the best practitioner in a specialized area of communications, well, a private law firm might give you the best chance to get a lot of buying or petition in that. It's a little bit broad-based, and you think you want to be a GC someday. Some private law firm training may be good, but it may be just as good to have, you know, similar experiences in another setting, whether you're the government, the FCC, or perhaps some trade association that covers communication issues. It just depends. Don't say where that business comes from.
Do you have specific questions just about your own? I mean, it's not a group that we can definitely talk about specific things that you were trying to gain or things that you've done that you feel like you've hit a roadblock and have not been helpful.
Please ask the question. I'm more than happy to share.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Walker.
No problem.
This is really helpful. I guess my question is, you were talking about how obviously the economy is falling apart, and as I've been in my job search as a 3L now, we're up against people who are, you know, out of jobs for whatever reason, who've been in the market for 5 to 7 years, and a lot of the job postings are looking for people with 5 to 7 years experience or 2 to 3 years experience. I think more so now than last year.
Yeah.
So do you have any advice about, well, I guess two things. One, when we network, how do we sell ourselves to compete against that? I mean, what can we say about ourselves, maybe what you were saying about the innocence or whatever that makes us more appealing than
to a certain extent, yes. Yeah.
Right. How do you really market yourself as the new guy?
Yeah.
But also, are there networks especially for us, I mean, arenas for us that are better for younger people to be trying to look to?
Absolutely. You know, here, you're in a great market by being at American University and being in Washington, D.C. One of the things that we have in D.C. are plenty of networking opportunities to smooth your grab hands, you know, do all the good stuff. Maybe mix a little bit of alcohol libation, which can ease conversations for some, so whatever the choices are, for some to do those things. As far as to, there are also student membership categories with a lot of the associations here in town where you can get in for free or at a very low cost to participate in things with the local American Corporate Counsel Association, the D.C. Bar, Maryland Bar, Virginia Bar, or any other association with some sort of lawyerly affiliation to it. You can go, you can gain access, and you can begin to at least showcase yourself, because I think the toughest thing for junior people or individuals with limited to no experience getting into a market like this also is that all the paper when you're an employer on the other side and you're looking at resumes starts to look the same. What is an easy thing, an easy lens for me to use just to eliminate and lop off a few folks? It's the 5 to 7 year category. And granted, there are some experiences they likely have received that maybe you have not at this point since you're just entering the legal career. But it's an easy way to get out. But if you have a face, a name, some sort of charisma, you know, because of your networking and what you've done, it puts you in a different pile and grass position that makes for a job opportunity that you would not have otherwise had without that, you know, networking chance. I mean, really, it's your 2 minutes to 30 minutes of an infomercial for yourself. And I'm not saying just sell yourself and understand what it looked like to me in person, which I could be clarifying my own time. But it's an opportunity just to showcase who you are and just give a little bit of your personality as you have these chances. It's going to be tough right now because the other thing is that hiring right now, people are almost looking for, you know, the savior to come walking across the water inside the door. I mean, it's that tough right now in a lot of places. However, the business model right now, I think, presents some opportunities where people are watching their dollars and they're watching their pockets, and they likely, as an employer, and when I've heard this from people, will take a flyer for somebody they think is young, smart, capable, and has a sense of eagerness to do a job. And if they can get you, perhaps at a salary point that is much lesser than what the fifth to seventh year person is, and that there's an enthusiasm that comes from you and a willingness to do it because they got the chance to know you, they're going to give you a shot, and they have given the shot. Don't use it as an eliminator to some of the opportunities if it's of interest to you. Keep it in mind, but know the odds that you're dealing with in terms of going after you. But I don't know if that answered your question directly to the point, but there are chances for you. Again, from a junior standpoint, networking, there's student membership categories that you can become part of. You need to just knock on the door of your associate with other professional folks because, again, it's that personal chance that you get a chance to touch with somebody. You can likely leverage that into something that I hope will lead to a job opportunity.
A couple things to add to that. We do on the OCPD website have a section on bar associations and professional organizations. So it's just a starting point, but at least we'll give you a sense of organizations that are out there that have student memberships. So that's one point. Second point is I will recall very vividly in a conversation I had with a recent alum who was clerking, because during the summers we typically have lunch with WCL alums who are clerking in the DC area. And she applied for a job that looked for 3 to 5 years out. That's what their focus was, 3 to 5 years out. It was in someplace in Southern Virginia, I think. Well, she was from that area. She only had, at that point, 6 or 7 months of experience being a clerk. She went ahead and applied. She ended up knowing someone who worked at the firm and talked to that person. And lo and behold, she's the person that they selected. So I agree. I mean, you have to be realistic about the parameters. But if it's an organization or a smaller firm that's actually advertising, that's a huge plus because these organizations don't, you know, hire on a cyclical basis. They hire when they have a need or when a new client comes in and they need someone to help or when someone leaves. So even just being mindful of the fact that certain organizations are looking, even if the parameters don't look exactly to be a good match with what your background is, it's very important to keep in mind. The other thing, too, is before I came here, I managed a legal recruiting company, and it was around the time that, you know, there was a huge bust in 2001 hit. And so for about 2 years, you know, the economy was bad, pretty much like it is now, but for different reasons. And I remember just trying to go along and plan seeds. Well, by 2002, 2003, business was booming again, and things were really popping because I had taken the time to really try to develop relationships. So even though this market is definitely challenging, it is a good time to really make sure that you are trying to plant these seeds. They may not, you know, bear any fruit or plants, you know, 2 months from now, but they might a year from now. And you'll still need that as you go through your careers. And getting a summer job or getting your first postgraduate position, that's just one step. You're going to be taking 3, 5, 7 steps throughout your career. So even though it's hard and I know you want to focus on what can I do now to give me this job that I need now, you also at the same time need to focus on what's going to help me a year from now, 5 years from now, what's really going to be, you know, a network that I can rely on when I try to make transitions. So again, I think it's a mix of sort of short-term versus long-term, you know, foresight in terms of
this. And one other quick point from the economics of it all. You guys are, I'm sure, more than familiar in terms of what some of the salaries are and some of the larger firms are. But right now, you know, I don't know your backgrounds necessarily in terms of what you've been accustomed to by way of salaries and the like, but do a personal assessment of yourself and figure out what you need. Take care of what you have right now. Not what you want or what you've heard about what was being paid in the past. And that can also be a negotiation strategy for you going forward. I've worked with very senior paid people in organizations who did that assessment in terms of what they need versus what they want and found themselves to be able to take advantage of a position or start a conversation because it was made clear at the beginning when you were seeking that job opportunity conversation that the economic dynamics were going to work in a way that it'd be much more important to all.
Creativity and flexibility definitely are needed. Searching for summer jobs and postgraduate jobs right now, I think the more flexible you can be, recognizing that there might be some constraints and challenges, sort of the better off. And that means geographically, if you're focused, you know, DC, 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 well, are there any other geographic areas that you can take a look at? Because DC is a very competitive legal market, even in a non-challenging time. It's a competitive legal market. So are you willing to look at, you know, Baltimore or Annapolis? Will you go up to Philly? Will you go to Delaware? Do you have family in Texas or Iowa or any place else that you could really take a look at? I mean, the bottom line is you're going to be able to get a position that gives you some substantive experience that then you can parlay into a position that maybe geographically is a little more desirable. So not everyone is going to have the flexibility. I mean, some people have families and just really need to be in D.C., and I totally understand that. But if you can be a little flexible, that can certainly help to open doors as well.
I'm looking at government, and from my understanding, they don't really hire until after you've actually been barred. Do you have any advice as far as going into that other than just the standard networking? Because I feel like they're probably going to get fairly swamped in the fall and just different things like that to try and make yourself stand out when applying to the government.
Yeah, now are you agree on that or? Okay. I don't know what opportunities there might be between now and the end of the school year, let's just say. But, you know, government workers are also overwhelmed with work, and what I've been hearing, they are expected to get jumped on even more so in terms of the work opportunities that are out there. I don't know what area of government you might be looking at going into.
I'm intellectual property, so, but really anything in business or property I find interesting. So.
Gotcha. Well, they're all this humming is one of those practice areas over the last several years that seems to be a consistent path forward to the future. It's always going to be active. One of the things I would do, especially now, if you can do it, if you can just even volunteer. I don't know if you have an internship program set up or maybe something on a part-time basis, but any way that you get a foot in the door, these people are busy. And the opportunity to get a smart person to come on board to help them out for 10 hours a week or whatever your time affords you could be that opportunity to also lead you to the full-time job opportunity upon graduation or sometime thereafter. And they will take you right now without a bar exam, perhaps even if it's in a paralegal capacity. For now, you know what the end game goal is. You know once you get your JD and sit for the bar, that once, you know, the conversation changes at that point in time. But now you're in there, if you will. They don't always have formal programs set up, but informally I've seen people do a lot of back channel communications and make things happen. So networking amongst the IP bar, the Association of Intellectual Property Law Attorneys, they tend to have annual and if not quarterly things that happen here in the D.C. area. There are other things tied to the IP practice that you see advertised in the D.C. Bar magazine. Again, as a student member or just a student, you can go there and just sit down, find some people, and ask, explore the opportunity. If there's any internship opportunities, just come and volunteer. Now, volunteer doesn't sound good, but, you know, at the same time, it's giving you an experience and an opportunity. Showcase what you have in many of those things. I can't tell you how many times a personal alternative contact, if you will, that has led to a very successful start and in getting careers.
Right, and you're gaining not only the network of individuals, but also it will be something to put on your resume that then you can use to sell to another employer. So with the government, it's tricky because we just went through a transition. We'll continue to go through a transition. Some of the government agencies hire through honors programs. Others decide all of a sudden that they have a need and they'll post on USA Jobs, which I was talking to an alum this morning. It seems like a black hole. But I do know some people who've actually gotten positions out of that. I think certainly you have to make sure that you apply to those positions, but networking within these organizations, within the government agencies that you're interested in, can be helpful too, because they know when something comes up, I think there's like an intranet for them and an internet. So basically they know when jobs come up, and granted some jobs are posted because they have to be, but they know who they're going to fill the position with, but others they post because they really, it's an open position and they want to get resumes in. So definitely you need to go through that channel, but really having someone who's in the inside can say, by the way, they just posted a position, if you're interested, let's make sure that you can consider, that's invaluable as well.
It's just a really good point that goes back to one of your questions in terms of how to compete against the 5 to 7 year attorney. if you had prior experiences before law school or even during law school, keep that in mind also, because that experience can pay some dividends for you too. I'm sorry to circle back, but it just sparked that for that thought of how I've seen people get over the experience issue because they have, you know, 10 years prior, 4 years, whatever it is, some sort of experience with an organization, specialty, industry, that puts them a foot ahead again in that competitive landscape that we're all experiencing.
And you would say that's true even for paralegaling work, or like if you've done, like when I was a paralegal, I did some legal research to the extent that I was trained to.
Absolutely.
But I always feel strange about, you know, when my work from then really does relate to a firm or a place that I'm applying to, mentioning it much, because it's like, well, you know, you're a paralegal.
No. It absolutely can impact. Now, granted, it's all about tone and how you present yourself. If you say that I was a paralegal and I happened to go make an argument down at the Supreme Court, well, come on. I mean, nobody's going to believe that. You might have, you know, filed a paper, ran down the Supreme Court, you know, something. But that's you've had some experience that allowed you to see the process and workings with is a way to describe what you believe can put ahead with respect to understanding what it's like to be a practicing attorney with you. I would appreciate the time to sit down and tell you more about my skills and capabilities. And it's because of your paralegal experience, let's just say, that allowed you to have the ability to stand on that foot and push that you know, suggestion through. So absolutely look back in those things.
I'm a first-year student, and sometimes I feel like I kind of missed the boat in coming to law school with an idea of, like, what area of law I'm really interested in. So one of my hesitations in contacting people is that I always feel like they're going to be like, well, what are you interested in? And I don't really have a good answer to that question. And I feel like it's very bland and blasé to say, like, oh, well, you know, I'm still figuring out what I want to do. Like, I feel like that's just kind of a vanilla kind of answer. So I don't want to, like, fake an interest in something and tell them, oh, I'm really interested if I'm not. So I just don't know what's like some tactful ways to kind of address that.
Yeah. Well, I guess that it sounds like you're trying to just get some information,
yeah,
before you have a chance to
sit down. Yeah.
And for us, you know, one of the things I would use, you know, kind of your peers here for one. I mean, there's some folks with different experiences, and sometimes around the soda in the cafeteria or whatever it might be, they're sharing bits and pieces of information from their own experiences, what they see. That can be helpful to you, at least to help you start figuring out what it is that you may or may not want to do. You know, if you have friends that have perhaps had summer associate experience in the second or third year level, or alums who come back, I mean, I have a lot of information in terms of different practice areas and categories of skill sets that might be of interest to you. I mean, there's some things you might even learn. I can't say necessarily in a law school classroom setting, perhaps in a clinic or otherwise, that might be a better way of finding out if you like doing more litigation-oriented work, regulatory side work, or transactional things. From that, there's 1,001 ways in which you can go in any one of those three. It's rare to be able to do all three. But if you can just find those skills that kind of puts you in that mindset, am I more of a litigator? Do I think of a stand-up and perhaps are, and then there's trial litigators as opposed to motions practice litigators, which you find out there also. But you can find something about yourself in that way and then dig a little bit deeper. Reading, you know, a piece of information. I mean, there's things out there, probably magazines and resources that you have in the office, or people are talking about what they've done, what it's like in the day of the light bulb. That's helpful. I believe I'm still getting more familiar with this. I'm ashamed of like blogs where people talk about what they did, some of that stuff. I'll provide some information that could, you know, kind of show like, wow, that sounds really interesting. Like, there's no way in the world I would ever take that position. And then that way, you're now starting to allocate your time in a more efficient way, towards progressing in a path that makes sense for where you want to be, and then have that conversation with someone with some more teeth in terms of what you want to do.
Certainly just banking on the relationships, and if you're contacting them because they're alums of WCL or your undergraduate institution, being able to say, you know, I'm sort of where you were at some point, and it seems like your background is interesting, but I really would love to learn more about it. I mean, so you don't necessarily have to commit, but at least there's some connection there, as opposed to, I'm just contacting you, I'm not sure why I'm contacting you, but there should be something that strikes you about that person, either because they're an alum, they're doing something that seems interesting, but you really don't know enough about it to know. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity for an information interview, just to get more information. What was their career path? How did they decide this was something, you know, that they're interested in? Is there something in their background, their interest that led them to this particular area? You know, what do they do on a daily basis? I mean, if it's a litigator who's just filing motions, and that's what I did for 7 years. It wasn't really ultimately attractive to me, but maybe being in the courtroom 3 days a week would be more attractive. So really just trying to understand the nuances between practice areas would be helpful.
And there's a way, again, how you present yourself. And it's not necessarily from how you dress. This may happen just on an airplane as you're going from your home to someplace else and you find out somebody's an attorney. There's a difference, though, between being perceived from the standpoint of intellectual curiosity about a position versus immaturity and lack of judgment. And depending on which category you fall in, you're definitely striking for the intellectual curiosity side of things. Somebody's got to be willing to give you some information and just help you figure it out, because it's okay to not know. There are so many people who don't know. There's many of us in terms of attorneys who like to act like we know everything. In fact, people, you know, tell you all the time, you were the smartest in your class here, you did this, you did this, you must know everything. A lot of folks don't. They pay you as an attorney because they don't know the answer. They want you to figure it out. So having that, and again, the way in which you present yourself when you're asking that question or sending that email off, it's good. Like, I have experience, and I'm trying to figure out a way to describe it without giving up this whole book. Someone from, I work with a couple people from top 5 law schools, let's just say, credentials mean everything. And so professionally, they like to advertise it. And this person could not get a job for me. And I couldn't figure out why until I had a chance to meet the person myself. So now, what is going on with this guy? He said, yeah, this, a double IV, this, you know, whatever it is. And you sit down and you realize, oh, I see what the problem is. And it's not only the parents per se, but it's just that, you know, dude, I'd like to get up to bed, man. Well, that doesn't apply in a lot of these environments. And I don't care where it is. And that is a reason. So again, intellectual curiosity versus showing a lack of maturity is meaningful. And you ask a question that way, it's
I know that the point of a lot of these things is to take advantage of everyday experiences. But I've had some everyday experiences, maybe on the metro, where an attorney will come up and say, oh, is that a torts book? You shouldn't read that book. Just learn the black letter law. And it's very awkward, and there's not really, I don't know the way to turn that situation into something that's actually productive. Do you have suggestions?
First of all, it's not the first time you ever have to take it. You have to learn it.
Yeah, it's so funny because I've actually seen people, you know, with their books open, you know, vigorously studying or reading something, and I laugh and I see the rule against perpetuities and I tell you, you know, the day-to-day experiences in terms of there's a reality here because you have to pass a bar exam, okay? And there's a way to kind of flip those conversations. It's kind of so to your own style and in terms of, yeah, I know I wouldn't waste 5 minutes on this if I didn't have to, you know, pass this bar exam for you, but tell me what you didn't. You know, have you find yourself applying this anyway in law? Most of them tell you no. But, you know, it's a way to get a conversation. Oh, really? And where are you working now? Now you get a conversation going, great. Well, it's great meeting you. I mean, if it's asking questions about the car or whatever it might be, and there it is. You flip something where it seemed where you were facing a situation where you had no response to, you know, take with a little white humor and flipping it into something else. And it comes with practice. I speak to a lot of people. So I'm not flipping conversation necessarily, but in the course of conversation, you just find a way to move on beyond whatever the sticking point might be.
Also, lawyers like to talk about themselves a lot. So you can ask a question that will have them just start to talk about themselves, and that can be very helpful. And in the conversation, they're thinking, that was a great conversation. Well, you're thinking, it was all about you.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay. I'll take it. And sort of wrong with a follow-up. So just keep that in mind, too. If you're meeting a lawyer, any open-ended questions that had them talking about themselves or what they're doing usually can be pretty effective, I think.
Absolutely. A significant amount of people here in D.C. have some sort of legal affiliation. They aren't doing it themselves. They surely have 2 or 3 people in their network that are doing it. And they're definitely waiting for them.
Okay. Well, I hope you all have come in and had an individual counseling appointment with one of our counselors, because obviously everyone's job and approach is going to be a little bit different. But if you have questions, please feel free to ask us. And I'd like to thank Bill for coming in. Thank you.